Chapter 7. Eos. Though we had the very worst steamer of the Hellenic Company to take us to Eos, yet it was a steamer that all who travel thereon treat with respect, for it was none other than the Panhellenian, which ran the blockade in the late Cretan Revolution and carried assistance to the Greeks struggling for freedom. A very little sentiment of this kind goes a long way on a rolling sea. And despite the celebrity of our craft, we were thankful to leave her when she entered the capacious harbour of Eos, Little Malta, as the Turks used to call it, from its affording an excellent refuge to corsairs. After the gloomy blackness of the volcanic rocks of Santorini and the unnatural aspect of the place, Eos seemed a perfect paradise of verdure. There is nothing of any extraordinary beauty to be seen down by the quay, but the rocks are bold, the harbour fine, and the lower plain bright, where flocks abound. And the aspect is as green as in an English valley. Moreover, the inhabitants of Eos seem to partake of the genial nature of their soil, for never in all our wanderings did we meet with a family so genial and gay as the Lorenziades. One brother was Demarch, another ex-Demarch, and a third the schoolmaster. And the ex-Demarch had three charming daughters, Marusa, Ekaterina, and Kaliroi, who administered tenderly to our wants, and saw to the fitting up of an empty house where we were to sleep during our stay, whilst meals were provided for us at the ex-Demarch's house. We got some refreshments down at the quay, hard-boiled eggs and cold eel, whilst we waited the arrival of the Demarch, to whom we had forwarded our letter of introduction, and we thought much about Homer and wondered if he really did die here. The town, as usual, is distant, about 20 minutes from the harbour on the hillside, so the Demarch brought with him muleteers to convey us thither, whose costume was very picturesque. Rough, homespun coats and baggy trousers, which were dyed a sort of tawny colour, a white knitted cap on their heads, and on their feet sandals of undressed ox hide, just a flat piece of leather fastened by thongs to the foot, most comfortable for long mountain journeys, doubtless the same that Homer describes. In their hands they carried long sticks with iron prods at the end with which to drive their mules. The effect of this costume is very good. In fact, the prevailing colour in Eos is tawny brown for women and men alike, and it is procured by dyeing the homespun material in the refuse left in the wine press after all the wine has been pressed out. Eos is, as other island towns, full of pigs, though of late a sumptuary law has limited each householder to the maintenance of one. And here, perhaps, more than in other islands, we were struck by the multiplicity of churches. Pigs and churches confronted us at every turn. Eos, with scarcely 3,000 inhabitants, boasts of 360 churches, 30 of which are in the village, which is called the capital. The rest are dotted over the island. At Sifnos, they accounted for the number of churches by asserting the piety of their ancestors. Here in Eos, they told us that when anybody had sinned greatly and wished to propitiate the deity, he built a church, and that all these churches dated from those piratical days when Eos was Little Malta. Three gaunt, ungainly pigs ruled supreme in the alley in which our house was situated, and looked upon our arrival as an evident intrusion. And as we watched them from our balcony and witnessed their choice of food, our appetite for Greek bacon was not increased. Just at the bottom of the alley stood two churches, the bell of which clanged perpetually in chorus with the gruntings of the pigs. Some of these churches are curiously built, consisting almost entirely of a vaulted dome over the body of the church, to which scarcely perceptible transepts were added, and a narrow porch over which is perched a thin, attenuated bell tower. Each church has a courtyard in front of it, not unfrequently sunk in the ground, and approached by three steps, where festival services the priests and the people sit for gossip and the distribution of koliva. The three daughters of our host looked well after the arrangement of our house. The bed had a valance formed of two rows of rich Greek lace, each row being 6 inches deep. The icons in the sacred corner were dusted, and before them placed an incense vase, which we were invited to burn if we wished. The marriage crowns in their round gilded case looked most imposing, but the basin and jug were the most diminutive I ever saw. As soon as we were supposed to have rested, D. Mark Lorenziades and his niece Marusa called to see if we should like to go for a walk of inspection. So accordingly, we set off and visited all the points of interest. First of all, the Acropolis, under which the town nestles, and which was the site of the old Hellenic town, as is evinced by the Cyclopean walls and cisterns. But the ruins of ancient Eos do not lead one to imagine that it was a place of great importance. There are few traces of marble remains, and the stone, being for the most part sandstone, has crumbled away and left but little to point out what the buildings once were. Also, down by the harbour are traces of towers and other walls. In the various churches that we visited, numerous inscriptions have been collected. In one of them, the altar rested on a pillar, turned upside down, on which was inscribed the particulars about a musical contest, and evidently once supported a choragic monument. Another church is constructed out of the remains of a temple of Apollo, the god of ancient worship here. The D-Mark was proud of his town and would not allow anything to escape our notice. We were taken to the spot where 14 windmills run up the hillside, from which the best view was to be obtained. We were taken to the cafe and regaled with coffee and loukoun. We were taken to the school and introduced to the younger brother, the schoolmaster, who was deep in the intricacies of a geographical lesson and made his pupils point out for our benefit the boundaries, seas, mountains and provinces of Greece, which they did with unerring precision. That evening, after a sociable dinner, at which fowls did duty in every form, a lovely surprise was prepared for us. A woman of surpassing beauty entered in the costume of Eos, a costume which is, alas, rare nowadays. The headgear was a veil bespattered with gold, with streamers which hung down behind. In front of it was a sort of crown. The dress was of green and gold brocade. Over her heart was what we should call a stomacher. Her feet were in dainty little shoes. Nothing could look more glorious than this woman, with perfect features, brilliant complexion and rich dark hair. We stared at her in mute admiration for some time. But it was not till next morning that we identified our host's daughter, Ekaterina, as the original of this beautiful apparition. During dinner, she had heard us talk of the lovely costumes we had seen in other islands, and she had been determined that her native place should not be behindhand. The effect of dress was never more marked than in her case. In her everyday dress, she resembled a good-looking, red-faced housemaid. In her festival costume, she would have graced a palace.